Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, The Flannelly Show. And I'm delighted to welcome somebody that I'm proud to know as a friend. Mike Carty is the proprietor of Rosie O'Grady's Bar and Restaurant in New York City's legendary area of, of Manhattan. He's been there for and has been in the business for 50 years. And Rosie's, as it is known, is very centrally located. It's near Times Square and is a Broadway theater district fixture. Mike, first of all, you're very welcome.
Well, thank you, Adrian. Thank you.
And again, I would say that for very good reason, it would be, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people over your 50 years that would have called you friend, and for very good reason. Because you and a great number of those who came from Ireland and wound up somehow in the bar restaurant business and then went on to become, owners of great establishments, some better than others. But you came from Ahvaz in County Leitrim, and if we can just maybe start there. When you came to New York, did you have it in mind that, the bar business is something that you had your heart set on, or did it just happen that that's where the jobs were?
Well, no, it didn't happen quite like that. I worked in London for a year. I was bartending in London, and I enjoyed it. And then at first I was working full-time, and then I worked on weekends. I had a different job, and then I worked weekends in London on the bar. And I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was a nice business. Then when I came here, I did a few shifts. I worked in the City Centre Ballroom, a couple of times. This is just not a regular job, and I enjoyed it. Yeah. And I worked in construction, actually, then for after we arrived here a number of years. And then eventually bar came for sale on myself and another guy bought it up in Monroe, New York. That's where I started out.
Fantastic. So, great success story. And I'm sure that some of our listeners would say City Center. Oh, my God, City Center. That was indeed ground, the basement of City Center, the famous New York icon center of City Center, was indeed Irish owned or by Bill Fuller, and had tremendous bands there. The resident band was Brendan Ward, and then there was another fellow on stage there that was in the lingo of musicians, of which I've been accused of a couple of times. Paddy Noonan was playing between the cracks. But
that's
a
right,
tremendous, an extremely popular place for the Irish to indeed assemble on Fridays, Saturdays, Sunday nights, and whatever that, and several other venues in New York City.
That was the best. The City Center was really the one. That was the one. I tell Caroline about it. It was a great fun place.
Oh,
when
yeah.
I came out here, it was a really good place on a Saturday night. You couldn't beat it. With big bands and everything else,
oh, yeah.
It was tremendous. So it was great.
Well, now, I'd only for self-preservation, I would have to give a plug to the Jago House, because that's where I played for some, maybe 12, 15 years, or somewhere around that anyway, in the Jago House, which is affectionately known, as as the Bucket of Blood. It was, but it has a great number of people who would come from the country, from rural Ireland, and they would indeed, the beer, and then the, you know, the tuxedo ballroom. There were several, but City Center, I have to agree with you, you know, was a cut above the others. And
It's great.
When you figure that, you know, Brendan Ward, as an Irish band leader, played with a lot of the early show bands in Ireland, like Mick Delahunty and some of those that even I'm to, I only barely remember. But that kind of music, that kind of spirit was fantastic. So it was pretty much there that you got the bug to say, this is what I want to do. And how did that work out? Like, where did you put it on there?
Well, I wouldn't say exactly that's where I got, but I did work there, you know, someone came just asked to help out. And I enjoyed bartending, and I enjoyed the buzz around it. So I hadn't really thought for sure of going into that, but a place came for sale in Monroe, New York, and myself and Pat McGirr, another regional man, we were able to buy it, about, and we started out. And then as a number of years went by, Pat got out of the business, and I was there for about 3 or 4 years. I sold and came down and hooked up with Austin Delaney, then in Manhattan, down Murray Street. So that's where we started out first. And then we started the first Rosie O'Grady's on Murray Street in 1972, I think it was. And then we opened another Rosie's then down in Maiden Lane and Pearl Street, down the first Wall Street. And then we went up to Midtown in 77. And moved across to the, well, as we call it, the flagship, where we are now for the last 40 years.
Yeah.
On the corner, 52nd and 7th.
Unquestionably the largest Irish-owned restaurant in, you could say, pretty much in New York State. Four-story building, a mammoth undertaking at the time, when... you know, when you went in to that place, and even, you know, granted that your wife Caroline Cartier, who is from Beacon Cross in Ballyhonus, County Mayo, that she was an interior and is an interior decorator, but to undertake a place like that, of that enormity, in what was probably one of the most expensive parts of town, in the theatre district and everything, that took a bit of nerve, and some would say cheek, but to go into an area like that, you know, with the liability which could run into millions, that had to be a big decision on your part, and it wasn't in tip top shape when you took it over.
No, we meant it wasn't actually, but it didn't look at all like what it is today, but we had a lot of work to do on it. But it, I suppose, what could I say, if you start out with nothing, you don't have any fear, you know, it wasn't like that I had any great riches or anything like that. So, you know, we kind of worked our way into it, and so it's not like you had a lot of money from somewhere else.
Right.
My father gave me, it wasn't that situation at all. We I think we had no fear of it at that time. And I know there was risk attached to it, but
yeah.
I think we're still fortunate to have gotten it at that time, you know.
You know, some people, and we're our own worst enemies, the Irish, because, you know, we give ourselves kind of a bad reputation in saying, you know, that the sense of competition with the Irish, you know, in the words of comedian Maureen Potter of old, your own gotcha. But the truth of the matter was that it was very prominent in the Irish bar restaurant business, actually to have respect and to help out, you know, other people that might be getting off the ground or you know, starting a restaurant, bar, business, when, you know, a bartender, perhaps somebody, for say, in Rosie O'Grady, would come to you and say, you know, I have my eye on this place here. There was no resentment in that. And indeed, many, as I say, hundreds of people would know that you and some other, you know, of your friends and bar owners and restaurant owners in New York City in particular would dig deep and help out. Not, again, not knowing whether this is going to be a going concern or not, you know. That was pretty true and pretty obvious among bar and restaurant owners.
Very much so, yeah. I mean, I got help along the way from people, advice and different things. And then when I got going, I had probably, must be at least a couple of dozen people, more than that probably, that worked for me at some stage and worked for myself and Austin. And they went on to open up their own bars and restaurants. And we always supported them. We always helped them out in any way we could. And I think that was kind of common. I haven't heard of anything different.
Right.
Most of the guys would help out other people, especially in the bar industry, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We, through the years, for decades, the bulk of 50 years now, we have many of us who endear are, like I said, proud to know you as a friend, would indeed also assume that since your location, since your clientele with the huge hotels there at, you know, 52nd Street and 7th Avenue right near Broadway, that you would be doing exceptionally well. And none of us, particularly in the Irish organizations, would be the slightest bit embarrassed to go to you and assume that you would be there and support the organization, support charities to actually be there and you'd be half thanked for it, because after all, you were, you know, here you were. It doesn't take much for any of us, I think, to look at others and say they must be rolling in money without, you know, analyzing the growth of a business, the growth of a restaurant, and whatever. That takes a lot of income and a lot of revenue, you know, right off the top. Were there times when you felt that the place and your placement in the city, because of the hotels, because of the theater district, that it was going to, you know, was never ending, that, you know, you wound up with four massive floors in a building, you know, starting with, you know, the basement where you, how would you describe the basement?
Well, we call that the pub. So that's the kind of more casual place for people to get down after work.
Yeah. And then, of course, Rosie's main restaurant. And then you then took over and modernized very much the second floor of Rosie's there, which became known as the Manhattan Club. And that was as close as we had to, you know, a very large, you know, area in a restaurant, huge space, that you could, you know, that became the number one spot in New York City. After that, you know, through Carolyn and yourself, had just before the well, for a short time before the onslaught of the pandemic, you had now invested a lot of time, money, and also, you know, some amazing architecture, you know, work in yet a fourth floor. And that was, so I think, you know, to say that this was the standard, you know, the standard standard bearer of, you know, luxurious restaurants in New York City isn't too much of an exaggeration. But I want to ask you, Mike Carty, about the lead up to St. Patrick's Day, the lead up to what would have been for you and for most of the restaurants, particularly those with some Irish attachment. What was that like in the sense of, was this something that restaurants went into, many of them going into, if not going into hock, went into, you know, huge commitment, which you would be getting back, of which, you know, restaurants, you know, would be benefiting from. St. Patrick's, there was nothing, there was no other holiday in the year that would have been as significant as St. Patrick's, St. Patrick's Day.
No, without a doubt, you know, it turned out in later years, New Year's Eve, of course, became it. We had the space to do a huge New Year's Eve party, a private party on all floors. But St. Patrick's week, the whole week, and usually a week leading into it and past to be a week, was huge for, would be our biggest week by far. And, you know, not as much in the last few years as it used to be, but during the 80s, 90s, and 200, then years, like for 20, 30 years, I think it eased off a bit in the last few years. I think things changed somewhat, but them years were fantastic. And I remember, I remember Chip O'Neill up on the stage singing back in 1980, I think it was. And there was all kinds of characters in there singing and dancing and whatnot. So it was, but Paddy's Day was, Paddy's that week was a special, it was a special time. It really was.
The preparations for that, the outlay for the St. Patrick's Day, not just for you, but for restaurants in general, and that was the word I was looking for before, with that huge outlay, and then on the eve of St. Patrick's Day, New York City in particular, just ground to a halt. For the first time ever, the New York St. Patrick's Day parade was pretty much canceled all over. What effect did that have generally on the restaurant business and specifically in the, for the Irish places?
Well, it had a huge effect, Adrian, a huge effect on all the Irish bars, and especially in the Midtown area, but I think would also, I'd say, in the Bronx and in Queens, and areas that would be huge for this Irish-American population. It was huge, the loss. It wasn't just St. Patrick's Day, but right around it. You know, we missed so much. We had a huge month of March organized for this year, including the party for the Grand Marshal. And
sure.
They had actually taken two floors there to, there was such a large crowd going to attend. But anyway, that was all canceled. So it was an enormous, not just for us, but for everybody. It was an enormous loss.
When, you know, when the gavel came down and it became just like impossible, you know, to even function, much less function, at the rate that was there, the closing of restaurants, the, you know, the shutdown, in Manhattan in particular, even though it was for New York City, places like Rosie O'Grady's, the Manhattan Club, And obviously several others. You had Connie O'Reilly and John Mahan and so many others that had, a tremendous number of employees. A lot of them, we have to say, Irish Americans. Another aspect of the restaurant and bar industry that was, perfected all through the years, the wink and the nod, and a great number of people who were here from Ireland, and in many cases the sons and daughters and those who were, in college and whatever, would find, employment, would find, a niche in the restaurant and pub industry. What happened, when it looked, for a few days we didn't know what was happening, and then as it went on and on again, and it became obvious that, places that were struggling as it was were now facing an impossible task, and were, Mike Carty, had to come to the realization that regardless of the success over the decades, that they could be out of business.
Yeah, it was huge, and I think it didn't sink in for a while until, because I think most of us thought that it was going to be a temporary closing, that we would probably, close everything down for maybe 2 months max, and everything would be back to normal again, and we'd be up and running. And it was then we began to realize, that it was going to be a long haul, and now it's the same way, the same feeling. Some people are open. Most people that I speak to are saying that, they're losing money to open. It's just they're opening and they're trying to, give some employment to a few people that can't employ their full staff, but they're all losing money. Every day they're open, they're losing money. It's just maybe in different areas it might be different, but in Manhattan here, it's just the people are not in the hotels, they're not in, they're not around, so it's very difficult.
Yeah. And when you have, again, since the, since the bar and restaurant business is very much part of the hospitality, tourism trade, and when you have major hotel chains, like, for instance, the Marriott Hotel, just shutting down, and struggling, and for a lot of places that many of us would know, places that one would figure would be all set for the next 100 years, and just having, the not only just shutting down, but shutting down permanently. Some come to mind, but what's your own reaction to that? Was that something that, even in your worst day, one might feel, that couldn't happen, not in New York City, whatever, but any place else?
No, we never ever expected that to happen. It really just was, honestly, that was on the Hilton, which is the biggest hotel, was only two blocks from where we're located. The Hilton on Sixth Avenue is, it's the largest hotel and conference hotel in the city, and it's closed until at least the end of the year, since the middle of March. And, at least they sold, they didn't fill it full of homeless people. Some of the hotels, and one of the hotels beside us has 50% homeless people, and it's not helping the area at all. It's just not good. So they were there prior to the pandemic, and it was having an effect on the area, and that's all over the city now. That's happening. Good hotels were operating, are not operating. That's what they're doing now to make money. Excuse me. Yeah. So, but anyway, that is another part of it. I know that hotels are closed, but some of them prior to that were putting in, taking homeless people in to, so it changed the whole look of the area. It really did.
And in addition to that, the closure of the theater district with not even a good guess as to when Broadway and the theater district will be, coming back again. The Metropolitan Opera House, Carnegie Hall, all of those places, nobody knows. But I would like Mike Carty to go to what it was like for the restaurant industry before the pandemic, and why was it that the city was in particular using the hospitality areas as a piggy bank. Anytime it seemed like they lash on another tax and totally unrealistic compared to what a lot of these businesses were going to do, even on a good period.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. The last number of years, for the last, especially the last 5 years, the amount of the regulations have gotten so tough on the restaurant business. The Department of Health, the fines, the grade system now is that they don't just, it's not like where this hazard situation where somebody might get food poisoning. They give you summonses now for if the floor is not properly, if they haven't put the tiles in properly, and but it's all fine. When you get the summons on the leave, they give you a summons and you have to go to court, and it's 500 fine. A lot of money goes out on that, a lot of fines. The taxes, the property taxes, and the commercial rent tax, which is a rent you pay because you have rented a space, and the commercial rent tax is very high. I pay over $100,000 a year in commercial rent, that's to New York City. In commercial rent tax alone, it is absolutely almost impossible to and everybody, either if they own a building, they're paying property taxes, and if they don't own, they're paying a percentage to the landlord if they're renting.
Right.
So either way, we're slammed with. In the last year, my property taxes in the last year, including, I just got a notice during the pandemic that it's going up. My taxes, property taxes, went up in 1 year. Over about $120,000 in 1 year's increase.
What?
So
it's
just very difficult for anybody to be able to operate under them circumstances.
With restaurants closing down, unemployment, the great number of people who worked in the hospitality area, again, overnight, out of work. A lot of people did not qualify, for the stimulus package, for unemployment, and reading between the lines. There were a great number of people here who were immigrants and woke up one morning and they had zero income. In the midst of all of that, it took the city, if not the state, so long to figure out what the regulations would be for outdoor dining. There was a lot of foot dragging also, and there in that area, and some would say they still haven't it right, one would imagine that the taxes, the fines, everything else would ease up because of the struggles with business. But for places in Manhattan that didn't have the outdoor dining, the sidewalks in narrow streets, it didn't do a bit of good anyway. You couldn't?
No. Some people just for different reasons, couldn't use the outdoors. And we have a place called the Glass House, and there was a situation there. We have no space out, the hydrant outside. We can't, there's no room to put any tables right out there. So, and there are a couple of restaurants just beside us there. They have the same situation. So it's very difficult. Some places have a better, it's laid out differently, or they have more space outdoors. But in general, it's not viable at all. So it's very difficult.
I will say it. You don't have to agree. But in the midst of all of the hardship and the struggle for survival. New York City and many parts of New York City could well have opened long before now. But, September 28th, a couple of days from now, restaurants, indoor dining will indeed be, eased in. But eased in at 25%, we hear that isn't going to cut it. That doesn't even marginally, is not a viable figure for revenue. And in fact, it will cost some of the places that have been closed tight. It would actually cost them more to open than to just leave it the way it is.
Definitely. 25%, it doesn't help at all. With all, there are other things that too, which they're enforcing now, which is the filters for the air conditioner, certain types of filters.
Yeah.
But the problem is that nobody can get them now. There's a run on them, and it's going to be like a lot of other things that, when the pandemic hit, that they just couldn't. They ran out of a lot of things, like the ventilators and different things. It's the same now with these filters, special filters for the air conditioning system.
Yeah.
And they're going to enforce that people have to have it as part of opening indoors. And most people cannot get them. I personally didn't look for them, but I've made a lot of inquiries about it, and it's very difficult to get them, if at all, around New York. So that's another problem that's going to arise. To open indoors.
What I know again for what was the a tremendous restaurant with a building that you own. There was no end again to the traffic. What's the situation now? You're down. What about the hotels? What is the traffic like there, and what is the possibility of that picking up soon?
You mean the foot traffic?
Yeah.
No, it's very little. The coffee shops are the ones that, there's the Pretty Manger that's beside us and another one, our next door neighbor, and neither one of them. The Pretty Manger is just one person in there, and it closes around 2 o'clock in the day. There's nobody there. The buildings have practically nobody in them. That part of town where we are in that location in Midtown there, it's either, there are some residents, but very few, mostly hotels, offices, and theaters. So there's nobody in the theaters, nobody in the hotels, and the offices are maybe at 10% or something like that.
Yeah.
So there is nobody in the area. At all. There's no tourists, absolutely no tourists. So it doesn't make any sense for us to be open at all. It doesn't.
That's horrific. Now, there are a great number of restaurants in Queens and Manhattan, and a great number of people who have either ownership or part ownership in restaurants, and they have had little voice in their present or in their future, and they've had it. It so happens that a lot of them are Irish owned, and you know, massive numbers of people, people in the industry, not only the owners, the employees, those who are out of work, stormed City Hall a couple of weeks ago, actually on the 14th, and made their, made their objections known. There is no chance that the mayor and the city council didn't know where they were and who they were. The lame excuses that were coming out of, again, the city council and city hall seemed, well, lame probably covers it, that, well, you know, Governor Cuomo, has been instrumental in tying the hands and whatever, which frankly just turns out to be pure bull, you know. There is tension between the governor and the mayor, and it seems like, the only way to get across to them is to have massive rallies. Otherwise, they're, you know, just kind of seems to me like they're playing, or to many of us, you know, they're just either nonchalant or, you know, just not paying any attention because they're looking out for, you know, their political opportunities or, you know, saving themselves.
I mean, they're definitely not, they're not coordinating their efforts at all, the mayor and the governor. They don't seem that the fact that they're both Democrats, but they don't get along on any issues, I don't think. But honestly, the city is, I think they're not doing a great job, honestly, they're not. And I think my concern would be that even if this thing settles down, that unless there's an overall plan to get the city back again, you know, in every way, not just the restaurant. But if they don't do that, I think this could be trouble in New York for a long time to come. Just we'll get a vaccine. I think it's going to go on for a number of years. Unless the city, approaches things differently.
Now, whereas the rally coming up on this Monday, where a great number of restaurant owners and workers will be gathering at 3:30 East 38th Street for 11 o'clock, and then on this Monday, the 28th, and then march on to Governor Cuomo's Manhattan office, which is at 41st and 3rd Avenue. To show that kind of strength and to show how successful, well, successful in terms of out and at City Hall, there are many who think that this should not be restricted just to bar and restaurant owners, that this is an opportunity if numbers impress, and they do. Shouldn't have to be Irish, you shouldn't have to be in a particular area in the hospitality area. If we're going to have something on Monday, let's do it properly, let's give it the best shot. Otherwise, we're going to be labeled as, you know, those who are not all that serious and just complainers in general.
No, I agree. I agree totally with you. I think it should be a very big cross section of businesses and people, and the bigger the better. I think we really. I'm not sure that it's. You know, maybe it's within a certain segment of the. You know, the business, the restaurant business. But I think it has to be. We have to get all the big players involved, and you know. I think a big cross section of people. So I definitely think it will help. You know, I haven't been in great numero of protests in the last while, but I do think this is necessary. I really do.
I want to finally ask you, and indeed I'm sure that this question would be very important to, to those renters and those who are renting. 25% is not going to cut it, no matter what way you look at it. How long can restaurants hold out at 25% when it appears that, you know, if you go outside New York City, okay, 50% is okay. If you go outside New York State, it's 60%, it's 70%. Is this 25%? Is that like a consolation prize, just throwing a bone out there?
I think it is. I think it's just there was pressure and they wanted to do something, but it's absolutely, for most places, you know, if you're very, very big, if you have a lot of space, I think, and being in certain areas,
sure.
I think you can, you know, you can do, make it maybe worthwhile just about, maybe break even. But I don't, unless it goes to 50%, I don't think it's at least 50%. I think people just can't make ends meet on it. I think they're going to lose money every day they're open. That's my contention.
Mike Carty, thank you for spending the time with us, and also to kind of spell out something that's getting lost, the message getting lost when people talk about New York City and, you know, the boarding up and the whatever and, the, you know, restaurants and hotels, you know, a new shock every day with places that can't make it. But I think that you have pretty much spelled it out for us in the sense that we don't have to. We shouldn't have to wait to see what's coming down the pike. Let's make Monday and a rally on the governor's office. Let's make it count. And I thank you for you know, on behalf of a great number of people who I know that you have helped through the years, and for many organizations, Irish and otherwise, and for charities, you're sadly missed, because if your doors were open, we'd be there with the paw out. My God.
Okay. Thank you, Adrian. Thank you.
Okay, God bless, and again, thank you. My guest friend is Mike Carty, who is the proprietor of Rosie O'Grady's Bar and Restaurant, New York, legendary steak and seafood restaurant. He's been around for a good while, for 50 years. His restaurant, again, the building, the largest Irish-owned restaurant complex in New York City, is located near Times Square, and it's in the, and the services, the Broadway Theater District. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.